Hello, it's Tom here. Before we get into this very special, festive, end-of-year edition of Last Orders, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone who has donated to our Christmas appeal so far. As listeners to this podcast will know, Spiked is completely free because we want anyone, anywhere, to be able to access our journalism, our podcasts, and our videos without any paywalls getting in the way. But to keep Spiked free, we ask those who enjoy our work to chip in. In fact, your donations have never been more important, particularly at a time when advertisers are so hostile to dissenting voices like ours. Indeed, even as our audience has soared in recent years, our ad revenue has actually gone down. Woke corporates would rather pass up the opportunity to advertise to you than grubby themselves by dealing with us. But who needs them? Over 70% of our revenue now comes from you, our readers and listeners and viewers. And as we go into Christmas, we're asking those who haven't given before or haven't given in a while or perhaps could afford to give just a little bit more to give and donate to our Christmas appeal. Your money really makes a huge difference. If everyone who reads Spiked on any given month gave us just £5 this Christmas, we'd be able to fund our work for 2 years. Plus, we'd be able to take Spiked to the next level. With your help, we can really make a splash next year, and we've got lots of great stuff in store for you. So if you like what we do, if you think the media is an infinitely better place with Spiked in it, please do go to spiked-online.com/donate and give generously. We also have a special offer on at the moment. During the Christmas period, those who donate £50 or more will get a free Spiked mug. That's UK donors only and, of course, while stocks last. To get your hands on one of those mugs, go to spiked-online.com/mug to make your donation and to fill in your address. Thanks so much, and now, on with the show. Welcome to Last Orders, the Spiked podcast all about freedom and the nanny state. In this special end-of-year roundup, we discuss everything from food fads to fag bans to the coming crackdown on the internet. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Last Orders. I'm Tom Slater, editor of Spiked, joined as I am in every episode by Chris Snowden from the IA. Hello, Chris.
Hello and Merry Christmas, Tom, and Merry Christmas, everybody.
We're delighted to be joined on this very special Christmas episode by Kate Andrews, economics editor at The Spectator. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm doing well, Tom. Thanks for having me. And Merry Christmas to you too, Chris.
You're in a very festive, all-black outfit. And he came in wearing a pork pie hat for some reason.
I'm feeling festive, folks. I hope you are too. Wherever you are and whatever you're doing, I hope you all have a wonderful Christmas and a very, very happy new year.
They're certainly going to have a wonderful Christmas when they hear what we've got in store for them over the next hour, which is a bit of a year in review about the nanny state, about liberalism, puritanical policies from the government and so on. So we're going to roughly kind of break up, I think, talk a bit about food panics, talk a bit about the crackdown on smoking, which is in the offing, a little bit about drugs and also a little bit about free speech.
Though. Cheery stuff, isn't it?
I wish I could say it's going to be an optimistic ride through the last 12 months, but it's probably not going to be. But should we start off with food, Chris?
So why not?
I want to go back over some of the food panics of the last 12 months, but we should also address something that's been in the news over the past couple of weeks, which is this idea that obesity is costing huge untold amounts to the UK economy. I believe 100 billion is the is the figure that's now
been rounded figure, isn't it?
Indeed. And it's being headed, this new study or update on some numbers, by our old friend Henry Dimbleby, the food czar, also the co-founder of Leon, which is a kind of upmarket, fast food restaurant, essentially. So do you want to tell us a bit more about this? Are these numbers all they seem, or is there something else going on here?
It's just the latest bollocks, isn't it? I mean, it's only a few years since the supposed wider cost to society of obesity, as they call them, were 27 billion. And then last year, it suddenly rose to 58 billion. And now it's 100 billion, despite obesity rates not actually increasing in that period. I tire of having to explain this, but it needs to be done. When people hear these estimates, they think that it's a cost to the taxpayer. Mm-hmm. So if you hear that obese people are costing society £100 billion, you think, well, that's not good for me. I'm not obese. Why am I having to pick up the pieces for these people who, and their willpower, whatever your interpretation of people being obese is? Then it's not. I mean, most of the £100 billion is worked out from the quality-adjusted life year. Okay, so the Department of Health sets a figure of £60,000 a year for a quality-adjusted life year. Now, obesity does kill people, right? There are obviously their health implications of being obese, as with smoking and other things. But the way to inflate the cost of society is by taking an arbitrary monetization of a year of life and then multiplying that across the number of years of life you estimate that people lose from being obese, and then multiply that by the number of obese people in the country. And yeah, I guess you can come up with this enormous figure, but that is not a cost to society, right? It's not even really a cost to the individual. You know what I mean? Mm. The debt. It's not...
the ultimate cost.
Yeah. So yeah, look, it's obviously sad if people die prematurely, but we understand that we're having to actually monetize it. And then they bring in all these lost productivity costs. So they go, well, if these people hadn't died, they would have produced this and that and so on. Well, they would have done, but they also would have consumed this and that and the other, right? With every pair of hands to work, there's a mouth to feed. To say that there's a cost of people dying prematurely is really the same as saying there's a cost to people never being born. But you wouldn't say that condoms cost society billions of pounds a year, right? It'd be ridiculous. Or say, oh, well, we're not letting loads of people emigrate to your country is a cost. It's not a cost, because people emigrate to your country, people are born. They then consume. So it's ludicrous. I mean, the reality is that the actual cost to the government, which is really the relevant thing here, of obesity is negligible. The IEA, as far as I know, is the only organization that's done proper research into this, looking at the full net cost, which nobody else looks at. The net cost, you take the savings away from the cost, and it was tiny. I mean, obesity is just not an economic issue. It's just not an economic problem. It's not in the top 100 problems that we should even be worrying about in this country. But because people like Dimbleby want other people to lose weight and eat the kind of food that he eats, they have to come up with these spurious cost estimates. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is worth pointing out that I think the Leon hamburger is like 20% more calorific than the Big Mac.
That is true.
So that is class coding going on. In terms of what food is horrible.
But it's more expensive, therefore it must be healthier.
Exactly.
And the branding is one of being healthy.
It's a status symbol, definitely. It's good. Naturally, Kate, Henry didn't just want to warn us about these potential projected costs. He also wants to bring in, I believe, bans on advertising junk food before the watershed. He seems to be quite interested, Chris, in all kinds of restrictions going. Do you think the government is going to... or whatever government we end up with at the end of the next election, do you feel like the direction of travel is towards more kind of cigarette-style restrictions on plain old food?
I hate to jump right into slippery slope arguments because I don't always think they're the strongest ones. And the government so far hasn't been hinting heavily at food restrictions. However, and I know we're going to come on to this, we don't have to talk about it too much right now, but whenever a government starts talking about essentially a smoking ban for the next generations. I mean, really radical stuff that, as far as I know, absolutely nobody was calling for. It's really impossible then to start ruling out what they might do on a much smaller level, frankly. I mean, if you're going to go that far, then why wouldn't you be willing to look at advertising or all the rest of it? And of course, we know that the policies that Dimbleby is advocating for just don't work. You know, and we've seen it with the sugar tax in the UK. It's not working. It's bringing in more tax revenue, but that's because people don't change their behavior. So if you're claiming that obesity is the issue, that's not working. Now, if you want a bigger state, if you want more intervention for the sake of it, if you get a kick out of telling people how to live their lives and what to do, then these policies are fantastic and you should be advocating for them. But if you actually care about people's health, this has very little to do with the situation. We could probably be emphasizing, you know, actually getting people into GP appointments and dealing with the 7.8 million waiting lists on NHS England rather than talking about advertising bans before the watershed. And I remember working with Chris on some of those reports around obesity, tobacco, alcohol, what they cost. If you put together what tobaccos and smokers and drinkers pay in tax, they more than cover the cost of obesity, and they certainly cover their own costs as well. You know, if we actually were to start changing people's behaviors, who were all healthy all the time, that would be a huge cost to the taxpayer. Now, I would like people to be healthier. I would like people to live longer. And if we have to deal with those costs because people are choosing to be healthier and live longer, well, that's a public policy issue I'm happy to deal with. But this idea that you solve the world's problems, this idea that the taxpayer benefits, mm-hmm. if we start bringing in these huge kinds of bans and regulations and crackdowns, that's actually just not true from the economic angle.
It's also a nice problem to have, people having too much food on offer and a lot of choice and not going hungry as much as used to happen. But Chris, this feeds into one of the kind of long-running stories of this year that we've been covering a lot on the podcast, which is the ultra-processed food panic. which has been rumbling on for some time. I believe Henry Dimbleby has also been into it, but it's been very headed up by the celebrity Dr. Chris Van Tulleken, who wrote his ultra-processed People book, wrote a very funny article earlier this year about him almost being kind of physically, or his daughter being physically overwhelmed by the taste of Cocoa Pops for the first time. So these are the sort of people that we're dealing with. But do you want to tell us a little bit about the where the ultra-processed panic is going, do you think? And some memorable moments from it from this year, I guess.
I think it's probably heading towards smoking style regulation, actually. You know, and
it's come out of nowhere, more or less.
Yeah, pretty much. It's literally just one guy's book, really. You know what I mean? And it's a Sunday Times Science Book of the Year. Really does make me want to kind of kill myself.
And we should say that his definition of ultra-processed...
Merry Christmas, Chris.
This is incredibly scientifically rigorous book, because his definition of ultra-processed food, if memory serves, is something which comes wrapped in plastic and has at least one ingredient that you wouldn't have in your kitchen.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. That's his simplification of it. But actually, the real NOVA classification, as it's called, is basically that. I mean, it's not simplified very much. Yeah. That really is what it's about. It's anything that's made in a factory, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And I despair that it's the Science Book of the Year, because I've pointed out very, very obvious mistakes in that book. It shows that the guy can't even read the abstract of a study, let alone a full study.
That's a quick question.
It's also badly written, yeah.
So would things like sourdough be included in that?
No, he loves sourdough for some reason.
No, I appreciate that post-pandemic everybody has some kind of sourdough starter in their kitchen, but pre-pandemic it comes wrapped in plastic and you wouldn't have all those ingredients in your kitchen.
What ingredients wouldn't you have in the kitchen for sourdough?
That's the other thing, because like, if it was my kitchen, there's very few ingredients in that whatsoever,
yeah,
anyway.
Apart from salt and sugar.
Yeah, I'm not sure everybody like has the yeast that's necessary on hand to make bread. No, truly, like would that count? Would that be classified?
If it was wrapped in plastic, yeah, that would be right. Processed. He actually likes sourdough.
Basically, everything that isn't a vegetable.
He went on TV to say that everyone should be eating sourdough and claimed, I am not making this up, listeners. He claimed that the human jaw has shrunk over time as a result of supermarket bread, sliced bread. And if we're all eating sourdough, our jaws would be bigger. And that's why people have to have their wisdom teeth taken out. He went on TV and said this. And the people around him went, wow, I didn't know that. That's incredible. They didn't say, like, you're nuts. That's not how evolution works. You know?
In any normal universe, he'd be on the side street just, you know, shouting into the air or whatever.
Yeah, you'd think so. But no, he's doing a documentary. He's the executive, I don't know, executive assistant or something for a documentary. I was asked to go on it. It hasn't come out yet, I don't think.
Did you go on it? Or?
No. I said, why are you asking me to go on it? I said, like, speak to a scientist. You need to get a scientist on there. There's no point in me going on it. It's going to be an Institute of Economic Affairs, probably funded by the food industry. So they would say that. You know? So there's no point in me trying to do it. I said, get a scientist on. I bet they don't. But when they told me that he was the like consultant on this documentary, I thought, well, this is just going to be a stitch up, isn't it? There's no point in me even getting involved.
Yeah.
So that's coming out next year, folks. Something to look forward to.
I have another question. So if something's made in a restaurant kitchen,
yeah,
can it be ultra processed? Assuming they're not, assuming the individual ingredients are in nice glass jars and nothing's being taken out and microwaved. If you're making stuff from scratch, so to speak,
yeah,
is whatever comes out of a restaurant's kitchen, then no matter the number of calories or the level of, like, quote, health that's involved in that food, can't be ultra.
That's fine. Yeah, no, you can make ice cream and chocolate cakes and all sorts, as long as it doesn't involve any emulsifiers.
You could go to a bakery every day and eat 12 slices of chocolate cake and claim that you're living a healthy, unprocessed.
Yeah, you can eat. As long as you cook.
But if you buy the sourdough from the supermarket in the plastic wrapping, we've got some trouble.
It's the element of capitalism that is a problem here.
I see. It's the mass production.
If money is changing hands, then there's something wrong.
It's fine when money changes hands as long as it's the artisan bakery or the restaurant.
Yeah,
it's just falling into a very, very, very long line of not just bad food policy, but bad recommendations. I mean, you're not helping people by telling them, like, there are going to be a lot of people out there who want to lose weight. You know, and they may want to lose a little bit of weight. They may be looking at making a totally different lifestyle change. And they're going to be looking for answers. And they're going to think, oh, well, this is the food czar. This is, you know, these are credible people out there talking about how I need to avoid ultra-processed foods. But if I eat, you know, three pizzas, so long as they're made in a really healthy way at a restaurant, it's fine to do that in a day. It's just, I mean, we've had this issue for decades in which the government, and then sometimes people endorsed by the government or just people with very big platforms, give really bad diet advice.
Mm-hmm. Henry Dimbleby said that exercise makes no difference. Like, so as far as he's concerned.
That, you know. I can trump that. Van Tulleken said on Twitter that the idea, the very idea that exercise helps you lose weight was invented by Coca-Cola.
There's a conspiracy theorist as well as everything else.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But, yeah, respectable conspiracy theorists, yeah.
But, well, you know, so I think that bothers me because it's the assumption behind that. I mean, I don't know what they were assuming, but when I hear something like that, it makes me think that whoever's advocating it just doesn't think the people they're speaking to are very smart. And I say that because, like, if we're going to be generous, right, the pushback is lots of people say, well, if you just exercise, you'll lose weight. And that isn't wholly true either, mm-hmm. right? You have to be addressing the food. Food is a really big part of that. But exercise helps you to address the food. Exercise gives you more calories that you can consume. Moving your body is really important for weight loss. And so when people say things like exercise doesn't matter, it's like they don't think they can have the nuanced conversation with the public. They don't think they can be like, well, look, it's many different factors and it's really tough and it's willpower does have a lot to do with this. And you're going to have setbacks. You're going to have, you know, good weeks and months. It's like they can't have that conversation. So they just come out with things that actually aren't true, where they try to dumb it down to the point where you're not helping people. Mm-hmm. You're not actually giving them a new way to live their life. And that's why I go back to that point about control. None of this strikes me as like really wanting to help your average person change their lifestyle. It's all about just bringing in the state, making it a bit bigger.
Now, our listeners won't be able to see this, but Chris here at least can attest to the fact that I'm looking decidedly perkier than usual. And that's all thanks to Magic Mind, which is the world's first productivity shot. There's no alcohol in these shots, sadly, but they will make you feel really, really good. Magic Mind is the generous sponsor of this episode, and I'm a huge fan of their drinks. Since we got our first shipment of them in the office a few weeks ago, I can't remember my life without it. We journalists, we tend to stay up late and get up early, and coffee just wasn't really doing it for me anymore. Plus, I was getting a bit sick of those jitters that too much caffeine can give you. I needed something that was going to give me a mid-afternoon pick-me-up without also keeping me up all night. And Magic Mind is exactly what I was looking for. It gives me that little burst of post-lunch energy and it helps me power on through the rest of the day. I'm also pretty sure Magic Mind has made me way more productive. I can focus so much better when I'm not worrying about the inevitable crash you might get with coffee or energy drinks. And cutting down on caffeine means that I've been sleeping better too. And just because it's good for you, Magic Mind, doesn't mean it can't taste good as well. It's a matcha-based drink, which means the caffeine in it will take a little bit longer to release than in something like coffee. That's ideal to helping to reduce those stress levels, and it also tastes great. The flavor is subtly sweet and not at all overpowering. So if you're looking to kick your coffee addiction or cut down or just change things up and try something new, I can definitely recommend Magic Mind. To get your hands on some, go to magicmind.com/lastorders. Plus, if you use the promo code lastorders20, all one word, you also get up to 56% off your first subscription or 20% off a one-time purchase. Once again, that's lastorders20 for 56% off a subscription or 20% off a one-time purchase. It also works if you already are a subscriber to Magic Mind. Enter our code and you'll save on your next subscription payment. Our listeners will know by now that Last Orders, we don't go in for fad diets and supposed health foods, but Magic Mind has genuinely made me feel miles better. And if you decide to give them a try and are disappointed, don't worry. They have a 100% money-back guarantee, no questions asked. So if you don't like it, they'll refund you within hours. There's zero risk involved here. So once again, that's magicmind.com/lastorders with the discount code LASTORDERS20 for up to 56% off your subscription. And just a word to the wise, the 30-pack is the best value. Now, back to the show. Talking about bringing the state in control, I want to move on to smoking. Chris, we've talked about this sort of ad nauseum over the past few weeks. I'm just going to kick this question to Kate because we haven't had you on in a long time. And since we have had you on the podcast, the Conservative government has ushered in probably the most extreme prohibitionist policy of a lifetime, certainly in the form of this smoking ban, this kind of escalator to prohibition where the age is going to go up by 1 year every year until no one can buy cigarettes. I saw you wrote a piece recently about how you've bought a pack of cigarettes almost in solidarity as a consequence of that. It's a kind of pro-smoking position that we fully endorse on this podcast. But what have you made of that? And especially the idea that it's Sunak's way to a legacy. How do we end up to a situation where banning cigarettes is place in history?
There's a lot to unpack there. I remember being at party conference back in October and, you know, everyone's speculating what's going to be in the Prime Minister's speech on that Wednesday morning. And I was hearing whispers that were something like, you're not going to believe it. It's so exciting. You're not, the Tory party is changing. You're not even going to recognize it. And listeners can hear me, you know, imitating these people with a smile on my face. And we got to Wednesday morning and I was like, you're right, I don't recognize the Tory party. What is happening? My poor colleagues are having to sit with me as we're watching the speech. And like, I think I blacked out on the on the rapid response podcast afterwards. I don't know what I said. I wasn't happy. I mean, I was truly shocked. I think Rishi Sunak believes in what he's doing. I think that in terms of legacy, in terms of, you know, his own personal feelings, I think this is one of those policies that he personally believes in. And that's not the way I like to see politicians govern, because they all personally believe in a lot of stuff that doesn't give you the right to push it on to anybody else. And, you know, we now see briefings in the news about how Labour are thinking about making vapes prescription-based. And you know, if you open up the pathway to do something like create two tiers of rights for adults in which somebody who's 64 one day can buy a pack of cigarettes and somebody who's 63 can't buy a pack of cigarettes, you've basically opened up the pathway for just about anything. And so whoever comes next, maybe it will be another 80-seat majority for the Tory party, maybe it won't. Whoever comes next will be thinking, well, what would I like to do? What, you know, what nanny state policy do I feel strongly about that I would like to? It's the kind of game you play with mates, right? Like, oh gosh, if you were like, if you had all the power in the world and you can do one thing, what would it be? But I don't actually want to see that happen in Parliament. And I fear that something similar has happened with the smoking. I was so angry that a few weeks later, I found myself in Paris for a weekend with a friend. And I had been thinking about this ban on the train. And I got off the Eurostar and I just went like straight to a shop and bought a pack of Vogues. And I, listeners, I'm not a smoker. And I'm not pro-smoking. Wouldn't recommend anyone does it. I'm quite happy that the next generation, the Zers and all that, are not really smoking. I was so angry. So I bought this pack of Vogues. And I carried around for like 24 hours and I sat down at a cafe really quite drunk on the second day. And I had my first cigarette in 10 years. And I mean, it just felt like freedom. I passed out an hour later
because my
body can't handle it. Like I got quite sick, but it was worth it. It was worth it. I was just so upset.
Chris did the same thing after the nitrous oxide ban. He was why not? Come on to. Chris, have you got anything to add on the smoking or the vapes crackdown in particular, or shall we
Kate has said it already, but these people, he does believe it. I think that's the only explanation. It's just, I know it kind of polls well apparently with people, although Forrest also did a poll that found that most people, 58% of people in this poll, thought that if you're 18 you should be allowed to smoke. And yet Ash, the anti-smoking group, did a poll, found out that 67% of people agree with Sunak's ban. So maybe the general public is not really thinking this through very carefully, right?
So I think the messaging on this from the government's been very clever, but I also think very, very misleading. Because when they're asked about it, they say, well, we don't want children to smoke. And it's like, well, of course you don't. No one does. And it's not, and it's never going to be legal for them to smoke. We're not talking about kids.
Yeah.
They just happen to be kids right now. We're talking about when they turn 18, when they're turning 90, you are going to have different rules for them than their peers. I think it's extremely bad policy. You can just think practically speaking about how disastrous this is going to be for your local shopkeeper and all the rest of it, having to ID people at the age of 73 to find out if they can legally sell them a pack of cigarettes.
It's not going to get that far, is it? Let's face it. They're going to ban it completely.
Well, the rollback in New Zealand is spectacular. It's my suspicion.
Yeah. Well, they got a conservative government there.
This is my true suspicion. I'm speculating here. I don't know this. But does anyone think that the Tory government in particular, but even a Labour government, would have rolled this policy in without a country like New Zealand doing it first?
Yeah.
My suspicion is no. And now the UK has to go it alone. I think it's going to be a really embarrassing experiment. The sad thing is that I think Labour is going to be very much in support of it. If anything, they were talking about this before the Tories. I think my deep frustration comes from the fact that I kind of expect this kind of interventionist from a Labour government. Doesn't mean I like it anymore, but I'm less surprised by it. The fact that the Tory party, which loves to cry freedom when it's convenient, is bringing in this kind of ban, I think I find that so much more difficult to deal with.
I'm trying to save a generation who are not, they're not doing anything. They don't smoke as much. They don't drink. The worst they do is use single-use vapes and then litter them on the floor, and everyone gets really upset about that.
And they can work on that, you know?
Yeah.
It's great to have areas for improvement. But, you know, smoking rates for the under 18s, just trying it for at any point, just having your first cigarette and then being a regular smoker are the lowest they've ever been. So this was a problem that was fixing itself and did not need the heavy hand of the state to come in and decide that they were going to tell adults one day what to do.
Should we talk about drugs briefly, which hasn't featured much in the podcast over the past 12 months? But looking back, there has actually been some significant moves, one of which we gestured to briefly there, Chris, which was the ban on nitrous oxide, which was a strange one because, as you remember, and as we talked about on the podcast, it was talked about, not unlike the single-use vapes thing, on littering terms. Yeah. So you had Michael Gove saying this blights communities because all those little canisters were found, you know, in the middle of a park somewhere after some kids have had a little session there in the afternoon.
Yeah, someone might trip over them.
Exactly. Oh, exactly. And nitrous oxide is a drug so dangerous they give it to pregnant women during childbirth. Mm. So it's really rough.
Serious drug, yeah.
But it was a really old-fashioned drugs panic. You know, the tabloids dubbed it hippie crack for some reason. Like, I don't know where they got that from. Because the hippies haven't been around for a long time and it's not a lot like crack.
The hippies had proper drugs, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, was that, again, just an inevitability, Chris, that they're going to seemingly crack down on?
Well, everybody wants something to ban. This is kind of the fundamental, almost existential problem, I think, is that politicians, they do believe in some of these things, you know, like Kate says. But the thing they reach for is always a ban. Mm-hmm. It's never, let's create something. It's never, let's allow something to flourish. Let's build something. Yeah. It's like, what can we ban now? And they ban so many things. They're kind of running out of things to ban. And so it's more and more extreme. And it's terrifying, you know, looking 10 years hence. What are these people going to ban next, you know? And in a way, it's more worrying they actually believe it. Because I think people like, you know, the for want of a better word, the kind of metropolitan political elite, whatever you want to call it, is the things they're concerned about are so far removed from the concerns of normal people. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many problems in this country. Just walk out the door, there's so many problems. And yet the things they're interested in is like petrol cars, smoking, single-use vapes, nitrous oxide. Like the softest of all soft drugs, you know. I mean, you know, every episode we have a what would you like to ban because you don't like it bit, you know. That's coming up later, Kate, so get thinking.
Oh my gosh,
we always ask our guest for a petty ban, if you were the kind of petty person who would just ban things for fun. And one of them for me would be nitrous oxide. Fine. These would be just, if you're going to take drugs. Don't fucking, don't inhale a balloon. Don't inhale a balloon of like something that makes you slightly dizzy for 30 seconds. Stupid. It shows how lame, you know, the younger generation are that have to resort to that, I think.
I think you have to check your privilege, Chris. Some of us tried cannabis once when we were a teenager and thought we had to go to the hospital. So
you don't react. You know, you don't react well to any psychoactive. Have you tried laughing gas?
No, I haven't tried.
You probably nearly
killed. I probably can't handle it.
Yeah.
and I can't now. It's banned, so, you know.
I'm sure you can still get hold of it.
Look, he's selling it out of his bag.
There's just people banning things all the time. Ban, 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 ban. What can we ban now? What can we ban now? And then the public, you get bloody opinion surveys. You know, oh, yeah, public support banning things. Yeah, we know. Public are terrible. Let's ignore them. Ban things.
Also, if you ask anyone about that, because again, it's you're inviting someone like to just impose their preferences on the rest of the country. So at times like that, like our question that we're going to put to Kate a bit later, everyone thinks, you know what, I hate that. I wish they would.
Well, that's what I've just said. I mean, if I wasn't a libertarian, I would ban nitrous oxide because I don't like it, you know? And that's not a good way to run society.
Yeah.
By just having the bloke in the pub going like, yeah, I'd ban that. we can't carry on. There has to be checks and balances on what the government does. And they don't create anything. They're destroying things constantly.
And also they can't do anything. Like
they can, but they haven't got the competence to do it.
No, exactly. Well, they become more authoritarian the more useless they become. So it's like, you know, you can't fix the problem with productivity. You can't work out how you're going
to... Yeah, can't build a nuclear power station.
Can't build a
dig a reservoir.
Exactly.
No, but who can dig a reservoir? You have to get a field and then dig a hole in it. It's impossible. No one can do that. That's why I haven't done it for 40 years.
They've spent like...
Bloody reservoir. No one can object to it in the middle of nowhere. You're basically building a lake. Everyone likes lakes. What's the objection? Oh, no, Oxford City Council, the Lib Dems don't want to build a reservoir here. It's going to be a blight on the landscape. You mean, what the fuck? Sorry, I have to cut that out. I can't swear.
That's very well put. But no, what you can do is you can stop people having laughing gas. So that's great. Before we move on, another thing that we should talk about is weed legalization or decriminalization, which has been something which, as we've often talked about, seemingly was kind of marching towards something like decriminalization. There was a lot more interest in it in terms of political discussion. There was increasing numbers of kind of MPs who go on some junket and say, actually, it's a really good idea that we should decriminalize it. And yet, I thought it was interesting that, Kate, that earlier this year, Keir Starmer really slammed the door shut on it. So he was gave this speech where he talked about how cannabis had blighted the lives of people in his constituency because the smell of it is everywhere. He was really kind of leaning into borderline kind of reefer madness stuff.
Littering issue as well. Box on the floor, probably.
When did they decide this was like the killer argument for everything, was littering? Yeah. But maybe
we should ban littering. Oh, yeah. It's another law we're not enforcing. We don't enforce any laws, we just keep making them.
But did you think that was significant, Kate, that even the party which has historically maybe had more MPs in it that was interested in cannabis decriminalisation seemingly have come to the conclusion that if they're going to be on the right side of public opinion, they need to close the door off on it?
I mean, this was a wrong calculation that I made 4 or 5 years ago. I think I assumed when the US started really warming up to the idea of decriminalisation and legalisation as a genuine public health safety measure, that this was the better way to deal with drugs than it was to keep everything banned and criminalized. I thought the UK would have to follow suit. I just thought, well, okay, if the US is changing, this is absolutely huge, especially given America's crazy criminal justice system. If the US, if even the US can acknowledge that its policy has been so wrong and that the war on drugs has failed, then surely Europe is going to follow suit in the UK. And that hasn't happened. And maybe some of our answer lies in COVID. Look at the way that different countries responded to COVID. The UK had a lot of people who really enjoyed the crackdown on others, who really don't want people to do things they don't do, who wanted to keep nightclubs closed and who supported a 10 p.m. curfew even after
25% of the population.
Yeah.
25%. Think about that, folks. Never forget that. 1 in 4 of your fellow citizens want nightclubs and casinos closed forever.
I'll think about it every night before I go to sleep, Chris. I'll never forget. Whereas you look at a country like America, which had really different responses on the state level, but actually more or less started to open up in June 2020 and never really closed down again. Certainly not in the same way. That more small L liberal streak, you know, it isn't in the UK in the way that I think a lot of us perhaps naively hoped it was. And politicians know that it's popular to be tough on crime. And Keir Starmer right now in particular, who wants to show how tough on crime his party is because he thinks he can compete with the Tories in areas that are classically Tory, like the economy, like crime, like immigration. And so he's coming out with things that, you know, are actually very center-right in their thinking. And, you know, it's a disappointment to me because if you are going to have something like a Labour government, let's get the benefits from the Liberal perspective. Let's get the benefits of a Labour government. To me, that would mean something like decriminalization of drugs. That should be a position that party stands for, that, you know, we don't go after the individuals because of a personal choice that they're making with their body. Go after the gangs and the crime. Sure. You do that by decriminalizing. You do that by legalizing. Let's regulate this stuff. Let's make sure that what people get is safe to consume. That's what I would like from a Labour Party. But, you know, Sadiq Khan, he's been very wishy-washy on this. And you know, when the mayor of London realized that it wasn't popular to talk about this, he pivoted away from it. So we've seen this in the Labour Party for years. It is just disappointing because this is the stuff I would really like to see if they got into power. I suspect I'm just going to see more of the nanny state stuff.
Certainly seems bound for that. Should we talk about another... This is one depressing development after another. I'm sorry about this. You two.
Sounds like a really happy year we've had.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas. Wait till we get to the postbag section. But let's talk briefly about free speech as well, because it's something that we touch on every now and then on this podcast. But I think this year was particularly significant because the Online Safety Bill finally became the Online Safety Act, which in terms of legislation is a really significant shift in terms of how the government's going to try via Ofcom to regulate online speech. It's gone through so many different iterations, it was hard to kind of keep up with it. It was, I think, began under Theresa May, so it's already gone through several.
You're going to have to take a selfie if you want to watch porn. I saw that the other day.
Seemingly, that's one of the offshoots of it, because really? That was one of the things that they were keen in ushering in was kind
before
of
before or after, or both. Not during, hopefully.
Thank you for that contribution. But aside from the porn thing, which I know you're very keen to talk about, Chris, is the issue is that the fact that it managed to be watered down. It was going through Parliament. There was particular concern about this push for Ofcom to regulate what they called legal but harmful speech. It's a very kind of Orwellian sort of measure. That's been pushed away, at least for adults. But the problem is there's all kinds of dreadful stuff that's still in there. It seems like what they've essentially do is going to put incredible pressure under pain of fines on social media companies to crack down on illegal content, which again sounds fine. But the problem is, how are they going to proactively pursue that? So they're going to have algorithms, or they're going to have very risk-averse moderators say, that looks illegal to me, and therefore they should clamp down upon it. Not least because even our own police don't seem to know what is legal and illegal when it comes to speech. That doesn't seem particularly good. It's also supposedly going to signal a the end of encryption, because it wants Ofcom to be able to mandate things like scanning systems, even for encrypted messaging. And as you were suggesting there, Chris, the thing that most concerns you, which is your ability to access online pornography. So just really
tell me about that.
What, Chris?
What's the deal here?
So you do you want to tell us a little bit about this selfie story?
I don't really understand it. I just saw the headline.
Is it one of those things where they're just trying to work out how to introduce this age verification thing?
What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong with giving some God knows what company who's selling pornography, sending them a picture of your face.
Very reputable there's, industry.
There's absolutely no chance that's ever going to be used to blackmail me, is it?
We're going to find out.
It's absolutely mental. Is this legislation going to get rid of all the soft porn bots I keep getting on Twitter? Because if so, I could be leaning in that direction. I'm so sick. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is it just me?
Do you get? You must get these, Kate. You're a high profile tweeter. You get the constant bloody "you okay, hon?" You
tweeter.
You bored, hon? And all this. Well, I know some people say they don't see it.
I think a
you
lot
know
of,
what I'm talking about. Don't you?
Not a lot of like if I've ever
I've had to mute
log
so many phrases to get rid of these bloody porn bots.
If I've ever had to log into like my organization's corporate account at different organizations, they get a lot of that.
You don't get them yourself.
I don't think I get very much of that.
Or maybe they tailor it to men. Maybe they think I'm interested in
it. It's got something to do with what you're looking at on Twitter. But the,
I've dropped myself in it. Nobody else gets this but me.
Look, it's. I think this is one of those pieces of legislation where we're going to find out the horrors in it over like quite a long period of time, because so much of it will come down to what the government wants to enforce. And a lot of the conversations around the Online Harms Act, as it's now called, when you would speak to some ministers about it and you would talk about what the provisions in it could be used to do, you get a lot of responses like, oh, but we'd never do that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, you might not do it, but you are setting up the power for somebody else to do it. And, with legislation these days, I always kind of think like, what would Jeremy Corbyn do? Like, what if if this legislation?
So I also think, what would Jeremy do?
If this legislation were in place and somebody like Jeremy Corbyn came to power, what might he do with it? Because you can't create and implement legislation assuming you're the only person who's ever going to be in charge. And we actually did have an election in which that could have been one of the outcomes. So what would Jeremy Corbyn do is kind of my go-to. It is good that legal but harmful.
I met him last week.
Did you?
I had a debate with Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, that's nice. That's
he was a nice grandfatherly type figure.
I'm sure he was very pleasant.
I was surprised.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think
he was just happy to be at the house.
I think most people are very, very pleasant when you actually get them in a green room.
Yeah, I didn't think he would be. I had a feeling he might be a bit sniffy. But actually, I didn't know why he didn't really know who it was, even though it was his main debating opponent.
One of the...
He's a nice guy.
I mean, perhaps this is a spiked point. Well, no, this is a spiked point, right? Like, you actually put people in a room together. Everyone's tends to be quite nice.
Usually, yeah.
Yeah, and in a way that just doesn't translate online. And I think people...
I met Peter Jukes. You know Peter Jukes?
Yeah.
This is the ultimate example.
I don't know him.
I met Peter Jukes at a wedding in the summer.
What a curious...
And
a curious
he hates the IA. And me and you and everyone like that. Yeah, listeners, I should explain. He's runs the Byline Times. And we have
Mosley Times.
A mutual friend. So we ended up at the same wedding together. We got on like a house on fire.
Of course
absolutely wonderfully. He hugged me at the end of the night.
Of course you did. I'm sorry. I love these stories, right? This is real life. And I think so much attempt to shut down speech and to shut down points of view comes from the fact that especially nowadays, you're engaging online. You don't meet each other. Everything is in a couple of characters. If you actually get people into a debating hall, the battle of ideas, like, you know, all that great stuff, and you put people in a green room together, like, it's not that they have to get along, it's that people naturally will, mm-hmm. and they can debate robustly on a topic. Anyway, this is nothing to do with...
Now, this is more interesting. Fact,
but...
Who have you met in real life is actually horrible?
I'm not going to answer that question. I'm just happy to say that it's on one hand.
You tell me later.
It's on what? Sure, for sure, Chris.
This is a really good question.
Just between you and me, Chris. The Online Harms Act still has a lot of really worrying stuff in it. And I think when we see a government decide that they want to push it, that's when we're going to see just how bad it is. And as you say, Tom, I fear that what's going to happen now is you're not going to get a crackdown on these weird bots that seem to be messaging Chris on Twitter with soft porn. You're going to be much more likely to get a crackdown on a publication's material. You're going to get more crackdown on YouTube videos talking about politics, talking about foreign policy, because the social media companies are not going to want to take the risk. And that will be a bot's decision or that will be a person's decision. In either circumstance, it's subjective and it's blunt. And both of those factors make it really hard for free speech to thrive, especially online.
I've just looked at my muted words on Twitter. This is what I'm up against, right? So I've got Prince Harry, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you up for some hi. Would you hit it? Would you hit that? Would you smash? Yeah, I got you. I got loads of these. I still keep getting the soft bombers.
Oh, my God.
You're all acting like you've never seen one.
Wait a second. That's not your muted words. That's your search.
No, these are my muted words. So I have to
wind you up.
Various words, because otherwise I get inundated with these women.
I don't think women, well, Chris. I'm sorry to disappoint.
It's like a Georgian teenager or something trying to make some money.
I wasn't born yesterday. I know they're not real women, but they're photos of women. They come with photos.
For all you want, shame on them.
They come with topless photos. I don't even understand how they plan to make money out of it. I mean, if they say, would you smash? And I go, yeah, I would. Yeah. What happens next?
You respond publicly? You reply all?
Well, I haven't actually done that. I hide and block. But if I said, yeah, okay, you got me. I am bored.
Yep.
I am bored. Now what? What happens next?
That's a very good question.
Maybe I should...
I don't know.
Maybe I should just reply.
This could make a great piece, though. So
right. Okay. Next time I get one, because I haven't.
I haven't
used all the words.
You could definitely pitch that, like, among the porn bots or whatever.
Yeah, I am bored. Yeah. I would smash. Now, what's going to happen next? What's the next step?
I'll tell you what.
Find out and report back next year on Last Orders.
Piece on Spiked, Among the Porn Bots by Chris Noden.
Thanks for doing that incredible piece of public sector journalism.
Investigative journalism at its best.
Should we have a look at the post bag?
Nah.
Postbag. It's bulging, eh?
So let's reach into a festive edition of the postbag. It's got a few questions here.
Is it festive? Are they festive?
It's not festive themed at all, but it is themed around the issues of public health and also the general sense of everything going to hell in a handcart, which is going to be more pleasant. So we've got a question here from Andrew Beckett. If COVID had never happened, would the UK be more or less of a nanny state than it is today? Would the proposed ban on cigarette sales to Generation Alpha, presumably that's the one after said.
Is it? Are we going back to the start of the alphabet? I didn't know that.
There you go. You've learned something from Andrew. Anyway, so would the smoking ban have happened without COVID? What do you think, Hope?
I think it would be, I think we'd be leaning away from the nanny state if COVID hadn't happened. I think COVID proved the power of the state. It gave people a lot of ideas about what they could do. I think the next 10 to 20 years, we're going to be fighting a lot more authoritarianism than we otherwise had to deal with, because people realize that there are levers to pull. And if you pull them, people will comply. I also think COVID's created so many problems, especially economic problems, but it's created so many health, social, economic problems that it is easier for government to do things like ban smoking for the next generation to say they are, quote, taking action, than it is for them to actually tackle the huge post-pandemic issues we have. You know, if you wanted to talk about health, we could have a chat about mental health. We could talk about the people who aren't off long-term sick because of obesity, but because mental health issues have skyrocketed since the pandemic. But then you'd actually have to have a mental health strategy. You'd have to be able to incorporate that into the National Health Service, and we are so far away from that. So it's much easier to pinpoint these things and just to bring in that slap on that ban than it is to deal with all the horrible post-COVID repercussions.
Mm. Can I just add to that? I think there's,
you agree.
I obviously agree, but there's more to it even than that, which is that during COVID, the Department of Health got an incredible amount of influence, right? Mm-hmm. Gained an incredible amount of power because everything was about COVID, right? And Chris Whitty became extremely prominent. Everybody knows who Chris Whitty is. They probably couldn't name his predecessor, maybe. And the rumors in Westminster, Tom, are that Chris Whitty personally persuaded Rishi Sunak to do this. People think of Chris Whitty and they think, oh, COVID and standing up and next slide, please, and all that. Mm. He's actually also a massive anti-smoking fanatic. Mm. As an anti-drinking and all the rest
of it. He doesn't look like a man who enjoys his like a session on the weekend, does he?
He doesn't exude that bon vivre kind of mentality. Yeah. Joy de vivre of Chris Whitty. So apparently he personally persuaded Sunak to do this. And then within weeks was at this ridiculous COVID inquiry, which we haven't discussed, but
we should.
One of the most disgusting things of the year. Anyway, he turns up at the COVID inquiry for the second time, for the second module of this four-year fast. And then just basically slags off Rishi Sunak and said, well, yeah, we used to call eat out to help the virus. So now the rumor is that Rishi Sunak's a bit annoyed by Whitty.
So are you hoping that'll make him turn against this?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Right.
Sheer level of...
Just personal.
I think you're going to be hoping for a long time. I'm not convinced. I think I absolutely believe there are lots of people around Rishi Sunak suggesting that he should implement the smoking ban. I also wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot of people who are saying, don't do this.
Yeah.
Because I don't think every person in government holds these like much more liberal attitudes, especially towards individual freedom. But I think ultimately, I suspect Rishi's arm didn't have to be twisted too much.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it would go through, without a doubt. They're not just banning cigarettes, they're banning cigars. Their greatest leader is synonymous with cigars, and the Conservative Party don't ban cigars.
It's crazy.
Beat me up.
I know you think that they're
going to... Happy Christmas.
They're just going to usher in a kind of across-the-board ban, but maybe one of it is just it's a gift to hypocrites, because it will never... If this plan to just raise it slowly would never affect these people. So maybe that's something that allows them to get behind
you. Yeah, but it will, because they'll ban completely.
Chris mentioned that the public polls in favor of the ban. They're not polling any of the people who are going to be affected by the ban. They can't be polled yet.
No, by definition.
Yeah.
And they're only kids anyway, so who cares what
they
say? Who
will speak for the smokers of tomorrow? That's right.
Who will speak for the unborn smoker? Yeah. No one. My body, my choice.
Few people will, but again,
I will.
Not because we want them to smoke. We want them to have the choice.
I want another choice.
People should be allowed to make bad decisions.
I've had this question before. You get it a lot. Apparently, it's like a killer question to ask anyone who kind of defends the right to smoke. It's like, well, would you like your child to smoke? Like, well, I genuinely don't care. I genuinely don't care. I have a child. I genuinely don't care whether she smokes or not. It's up to her, right? I would much rather that she lives in a free country than a country in which she's not allowed to buy tobacco at all. It's entirely up to her. She's going to be a grown-up. She's not now, but she will be a grown-up, right?
There's all sorts of things.
And then she can do what she bloody wants, same as I did.
But there's also all sorts of things you might not, what you would rather she wouldn't do that she is still free to do.
Like, yeah, right.
One does not.
I don't want her to have a weedy suitcase.
But exactly.
If she wants to have one, she should be able to do that.
But this is it.
We're going back to
a throwback. I would frame it.
I saw another guy got trapped in the gates yesterday. It was brilliant. Sorry,
save that.
I would frame it slightly differently. I wouldn't want a future kid of mine to smoke, but that doesn't mean I have the right to stop them once they turn 18. Mm. In the same way, you wouldn't want them to marry an awful person, or you know, you would have lots of hopes and dreams and things that you would hope your kid.
You wouldn't want them to join the Lib Dems, or there's all sorts of things you could come up with.
Yeah, I wouldn't want them going to MAGA rallies. But, like, they would have every right, because I'm sure Donald Trump. You know, if I ever have a kid in 30 or 40 years' time, we'll still be running for president. So that's not for another adult to tell another adult, even if it's your kid.
We've got another really depressing question.
Oh,
nice.
Is Britain in a terminal state of
decline? Who's that from?
It's from a guy called Doug Allen. He actually just sort of pointed us to a piece by a friend of Spike, Paul Embry, which was suggesting that we are circling the drains, as it were. But Chris, quick response or
Merry Christmas.
Immediate response to that.
Yes. Case, what do you think?
The mood music's bad at the moment, isn't it? It doesn't feel like, you know, it's a particular...
I think I'm going to move to Argentina if things turn out all right.
And why is that, Chris?
Mr. Malou. whatever he's called.
Mr. Malou.
Isn't that what he's called?
Is it Malay or?
Signor Malou.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
I don't know. I can't pronounce it. But if he can turn things around, even if he can't, to be honest, I think it'd be a better career. I think Argentina now, with 140% inflation and constant chaos, is still a more appealing proposition than Britain 2024.
What do you think?
It's a choice. I mean, it obviously does not have to be this way. It is not written in the stars that Britain is doomed for a terminal state of decline. But to turn it around, you'd have to have some politicians that were willing to address the health service, are willing to address pensions.
To take a chainsaw to the various public services.
Particular ones.
And even you wouldn't even have to necessarily take a chainsaw, but you have to address health, have to address pensions, mm-hmm. have to address planning, have to address energy. And then you have to have a public that's receptive to hearing that.
Right. So basically we do.
Magical.
No chance anyone's going to do any of that.
A Christmas miracle could be bestowed upon us and perhaps we don't have to be in a terminal state of decline.
I'm kind of looking forward to our future of decline in a way.
We're going to sort of make the most of it somehow.
Yeah, I think it'd be all right. And there's kind of honour amongst thieves and you know, the entire country falls apart and tobacco is obviously going to go all black market. I think it's increasing. It could be a black market. Black markets aren't that bad. Everyone has a go at, you know, oh, we should legalize drugs because it gets them out of black. I mean, the drug market. I don't take drugs, by the way, folks. But it works fairly well.
If you're not at the start of the supply chain.
Yeah, for like decades.
Inflation-proof, from what I've heard.
Yeah.
I'm not sure the people working around the jug lords are having the best time.
Yeah, I know. Look, I know there are problems down the.
But the tobacco black market's going to be a lot tamer than that. It'll just be like a bunch of shops selling like Egyptian Marlboros under the table or something. It'll be, you know.
It's not going to be that bad. All the lights will go out, obviously, because we won't have any power. But we can.
That's the downside.
We can light up our illegal cigarettes in the dark.
Light up our illegal fags. We can light some fires. It will bring the country together. The complete collapse of Western civilization will bring us together.
I think fires are quite bad for carbon emissions. Like that might be banned.
Oh, that's true.
We'll all come together. What we haven't had in this country for a long time is something that really pulls us together through adversity.
Yeah.
People like COVID. A lot of people like COVID because it pulled us together, supposedly. Right?
You know, separate houses.
This is going to be...
Never having to see one another was fantastic for social cohesion.
This is going to be much better than COVID because we'll all be able to see each other. There won't be any lockdowns. There won't be any law. Rules. Let's do what we want.
You think that the terminal state of decline is going to lead to some anarchy. Authoritarian anarchy because nothing's allowed, but there are no, but apart from nothing, from everything being
the
banned, all rules are off.
Everything's banned, but effectively you can do what you want.
Right. Okay. That sounds awful.
I think it sounds good.
That sounds really bad.
Yeah, it'd be all right, man.
Law of the jungle.
Very
dangerous.
Just get a gun. It'd be all right.
Oh my God.
Now, I would like to end on that very positive note, but we do have to end the podcast by asking you, Kate, the question that we ask all of our guests, something we introduced a little while ago now, which is to say, if you had one ban, what would it be?
Can I ban this question?
No, you can't.
No, it has to be something personal.
Well, we've got to make that one the rules. So the rules are you can't ban this question. That's number one.
It wasn't a rule until right now that I think it's totally terrible question.
I said wheelie suitcases. I've also said people wearing backpacks on the tube. People getting in my way in London. Most of it comes down.
People getting in specifically your way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like shower gel, bottles of shower gel. Yeah,
we've had people want to ban Americans from the tube. No offense. That was one that came up. That was one.
What do we do? What do we do on the tube? That's so offensive.
I think they meant tourists. I don't think it was like a.
We are quite nasally and loud, so maybe they're.
I think what they were concerned about was like someone, you know, bowling onto the tube, being like, "Where am I going? Is this the right thing?"
Anyone who slows you down in London. Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody.
Why do you have issues with bottles of shower gel?
I think you should use soap.
Oh.
Wrapped in a nice
salt, it comes down to. I think you should use soap.
I hate this question. It makes me feel sick.
Well, some of that really annoys you, Kate.
Yeah. You know what? I get asked this question by quite a lot of people.
Oh, yeah?
And I've struggled to answer for a really long time. And it's interesting I'm being asked now because about a month ago, I had an experience where I thought, this is my answer to this question.
Mm, yeah.
It's really quite specific.
I'm on tenterhooks.
I think we should ban the marching band shutting down half of London, like all of the mall, all of Westminster, and cutting people off from being able to cross to the other side, unless it's a special occasion, okay? So why is it? I get coronation, right? I get the big birthdays. I get the king's speech, all very important, shut down the mall. But why is it that you're allowed to trap people in St. James's Park and not let them out? Because the marching band's going to do a 30-minute
what
whatever.
What marching band are we talking about?
I actually don't know specifically what the occasion was.
I had no idea this was such a thing. So there's marching bands in Westminster.
I imagine it had to have been connected to the royal family.
Not a bunch of young miscreants.
They might have.
With a sousaphone and
I don't know what the occasion was because I didn't see it advertised anywhere. But I think the band connected to, I don't know. They're marching down the mall and they shut it down for 45 minutes. And I kept saying to the police officers,
arrest them.
How do I get out? How do I get to the other side? And they were like, you don't get to the other side.
Sorry, mum, there's a marching band on.
And they were like, oh, Saturday, they were like, you can stand here and watch. And I was like, well, thank you so much. But I actually really have to, I really must be on my way. And then I was like, so how do I get out? And they were like, well, you don't really get out. You got to go back. And it, thing is, I wouldn't ban it. I wouldn't ban it still, but you're forcing my hands here.
You're a real libertarian. True libertarian. You wouldn't even ban that.
It was a real inconvenience. It was a real inconvenience.
Well, I like that because it taps into all my choices, which all involve people slowing me down when I'm trying to get through London.
Slowing you specifically down, though. I like that it's not you can't slow people down. It's you can't slow Chris Snowden down.
No,
don't slow anyone. Don't slow anyone.
Oh, it's okay. It's more universal.
But I walk faster than everybody else in London.
You don't
literally
walk faster.
Everybody. No, I do. No, yes,
no,
I do.
No, you don't.
I have never been overtaken in London. I'm constantly.
We have walked down the street before, and
around.
I have thought to myself, "Gosh, he needs to pick up the."
I was in London on Saturday, which I'm not normally in London on Saturday. I was coming back down from York, trying to get to the Worthing game, and I always think in my head that London is less busy on a Saturday, but it's bloody worse. Because you just got tourists.
It's a weekend.
Just constantly.
Why did you think it was less busy?
Because most of the people in London are working, aren't they? I thought on the weekend they'd be at home just having a coffee or something. Yeah. But you get
go out.
What you
this
think city dwellers do?
You
know, city dwellers just sit at home. Is that what you think living?
Have a like, nice cup of tea.
Well, they're not commuting, are they? They're not wandering going to work. So I almost think it's going to be quiet, and it wasn't. It was more busy with more people with bloody massive wheelie. Bags. Is that what they're called? What are your suitcases?
Did somebody hurt you with a wheelie bag?
Well, they are slower than anybody else, aren't they?
Oh,
and they get in your way. They have more tail than anyone else. So you're stuck behind. You can't left or right. You don't know
sounds
which way
tough.
To go.
Sounds tough, yeah.
But the tourists, they just stop dead. I've never seen anyone stop dead so quickly as tourists in London. Mm. You're walking along and they suddenly just bang, stop. Yeah. Just like that.
They've opened their mouth.
And then
no
turn
break,
around. Yeah.
No
oh,
brake
I don't
lights.
Know where I don't
no
know where
signaling.
Yeah. Right. Get out of my way. Okay. Merry Christmas, everyone. And if you're in London next year, get out of my way.
There's no better point to end this. Chris, Kate, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to Last Orders. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Please do take a moment to leave us a rating and a review. And if you'd like to support the show, why not become a Spiked supporter? Just go to spiked-online.com/supporters to sign up. That's spiked-online.com/supporters.